Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Suzlon Energy Limited Q2 FY26 earnings conference call. During this call, the company management may make certain statements that reflect their outlook for the future, which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risks as detailed in the annual report. Actual results may differ, so these statements should be reviewed in conjunction with the risks the company faces. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and if you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. We will begin with the opening remarks, followed by a Q&A session. To be fair to others, we kindly request each participant to ask no more than two or three questions. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and senior members of the finance team. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. J.P. Chalasani, sir. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Suzlon's Quarter 2 FY26 earnings conference call. In Quarter 2 FY26, India's power sector marked two historic milestones. We have reached a cumulative installed power capacity of over 500 gigawatts. More importantly, the non-fossil fuel capacity of this is 50%. So therefore, clearly signaling the renewable transition which is underway. Talking about the industry, the recent reduction in GST from 12% to 5% on wind turbines is a major boost for the sector. It is expected to substantially lower capital expenditure and effectively reduce the levelized cost of energy. This move is expected to accelerate the capacity addition across the wind energy landscape, make renewable power more affordable to end consumers, expedite pace of energy transition. Additionally, MNRE's release of standard operating procedures, SOP, for inclusion in the ALMM wind reinforces its commitment to quality and domestic manufacturing, a key step towards meeting India's growing energy demand sustainably. On the commissioning front, industry commissioned over 3 gigawatts in first half of FY26, doubled installations in the corresponding period in FY25, indicating a notable acceleration in execution. We firmly believe total wind installations to reach approximately 6 gigawatts by the end of FY26 and 8 gigawatts in FY27. Coming to business highlights, we are pleased to report yet another record-breaking quarter. As Suzlon has set a new benchmark in execution by delivering a record-breaking 565 megawatts in Quarter 2 FY26, the highest ever Quarter 2 in India we delivered in over 30-year history. Our order book has exceeded 6 gigawatts, reaffirming our market leadership with more than 2 gigawatt orders win in the first half of FY26. Taking it through our... S144 order book has exceeded 5.6 gigawatts, a strong endorsement of its advanced technology and customer trust. It also got certified as the lowest carbon footprint and full compliance with MNRE's latest regulations. On the manufacturing front, our capacity of 4.5 gigawatts is fully operational and ramped up to meet the order book. Suzlon commissioned 270 megawatts in first half of this financial year, with a robust execution pipeline of 1865 megawatts at various stages. Site readiness is progressing across 29 locations in 7 states, laying the groundwork for accelerated installations ahead. We have specifically included this as part of our investor presentation at slide number 21, and we will further discuss this during our Q&A. Update on land development, unlocking long-term execution potential. We have been saying for the last few quarters that our concentration or our strategy is now towards the development, land development in advance, so that the execution delays can be curtailed in significant way. With that in view, currently we have identified 23 plus gigawatts of renewable potential sites, laying a strong foundation for sustained growth. Out of these 7+ gigawatts of land development is underway, ensuring rapid deployment readiness. Seed capital allocated, strategically invested without materially impacting working capital. Execution velocity is set to accelerate, enabling faster value realization. This would also enable us to increase our EPC share in the coming years from the current 20-80 ratio. Our OMS business continues to perform strongly with over 15 gigawatts under management in India and machine availability consistently above 95%. Renom's assets under management set to expand further, driven by steady customer fleet acquisitions and the ongoing pipeline. Our forging and foundry business started showing our efforts in unlocking potential with 53% year-on-year growth in first half of this year, revenues with 243% jump in EBITDA to reach 52 crores, and we expect to continue this trend in FY26. On leadership centering, we have appointed Mr. Rahul Jain as our Chief Financial Officer effective 15 December 2025. His vast experience and deep expertise will help us evaluate new areas of high growth while strengthening financial health and corporate governance even further. We welcome Rahul to the Suzlon leadership team. Taking you through the financial performance in quarter 2 FY26, Suzlon continued its exponential growth trajectory, delivering 565 megawatts, 121% growth on a year-on-year basis, with all financial parameters showing a strong uptrend. Suzlon reported consolidated revenue of 3,866 crores in quarter 2 FY26, with EBITDA reaching 721 crores, a robust 145% increase in year-on-year. The EBITDA margin improved by 460 basis points to 18.6%, up from 14.1% in the same quarter last year. They achieved a profit before tax of 562 crores, registering 117% year-on-year growth over quarter 2 FY25, with PAT outperforming at 1279 crores. In quarter 2 FY26, the company has recognized an incremental net before tax asset of 718 crores based on reasonable certainty of future profits. This brings the total DTA, that is deferred tax asset, cumulative DTA as on September 25 to 1229 crores, which provides a tax shield on future profits to the tune of 5,000 crores. The additional carry forward losses remain available with the company and are likely to result into further recognition of DTA in future, subject to meeting the required recognition criteria. DTA recognition public charge is a non-cash item. However, DTA provides tax shield for future profits, and the company does not need to pay taxes to the extent of DTA. We are pleased to report on our balance sheet as of September 25 reflects the position of exceptional strength with a strong consolidated net worth of 7,860 crores. Our net cash position is at 1480 crores, further enhancing our financial flexibility and resilience. Adequate banking limits tied up to 7,000 crores for execution of the current order book. We remain committed to achieving our FY26 guidance of 60% year-on-year growth across all key performance parameters. I would also like to reiterate that our end-to-end wind energy models, supported by a fully integrated supply chain, proven execution capabilities, and best-in-class service, delivers a competitive edge that is both distinctive and difficult to replicate. With this, now we can open for Q&A.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir, and congratulations on a very good set of numbers. So my first question is on the slide number 22 and slide number 23 of the presentation. So there's the 1865 megawatt which you mentioned in the slide number 23. Is it over and above the 838 megawatt or 1009 megawatt mentioned in the slide number 22? is it fair to expect that this is 1865 megawatt will get installed and start contributing to the revenues for H2 FY26 and FY27? Is that the right understanding?
Let me, Mohit, thanks for your encouraging thing in the beginning. Let me explain from slide 23, which will be clear to you. As we reported, we have done 270 megawatts of commissioning as in the first two quarters. However, there is a significant, this slide shows a significant pipeline available for commissioning in the next two quarters. What it shows is that as on 1st of October 2025, we have 1865 megawatts of execution pipeline, out of which 568 megawatts is already erection completed. Even if we take just, let's consider 568 megawatts of erection done, which is beyond the 270 megawatts what is commissioned till 30th of September. In this 568 megawatt, as we speak today, 80 megawatt is already commissioned, taking the cumulative capacity to 350 megawatt this year, and another 144 megawatt is 160 megawatts is actually ready for commissioning. We have done everything what is required, waiting for the client's evacuation methodology, evacuation readiness. So that takes to 240, 80 COD done, and 160 megawatts is ready for commissioning from our end, which will obviously get commissioned in this quarter. And in addition to that, about 327 megawatt, that's balance of 568 megawatt, is erection is completed in the process of commissioning activities. That means what we are saying is that even as on today, you see a clear visibility. While the more and more erections will happen in the balance period of the quarter, we see a clear visibility of 568 megawatts at different stages would get commissioned in this quarter. So therefore, while the capacity addition has been lower in the H1, we see a clear visibility in the H2, and we are reasonably confident that taking 6 gigawatts as the country's capacity addition this year, we would definitely touch 25% of market share. So that is 1500 megawatts. Is reasonably confident. While first half is only 270, but looking at the visibility what we have, so the slide is trying to say is that we have done foundation, we have done everything to give the comfort that this year is going to be different for us compared to earlier. In fact, if you look at as on 30th of October, we crossed the entire last year's capacity addition what we had done. Last year we did 326. On 31st of October, we were at 350. So this gives the confidence that, you know, we will achieve the market share of 25% this year, definitely. And is it clear, Mohit?
Yes, it is clear. My second question is the inquiry pipeline. How is the inquiry pipeline looking like for the new orders? Basically, the concerns on new order inflow increased materially compared to last year on account of low bidding activity and the recent news around cancellation of LOA of worth of 42 gigawatt.
See, our obviously, you're seeing that this quarter, again, we continue the trend of closing order book higher than the opening order book, in spite of the fact that our deliveries during the quarters are going up. If you see this quarter itself, we added more than one, I think we received orders more than 1.4 gigawatts. That's why even if we've done 565, we moved to 6.2 gigawatts of order book. There is a significant pipeline which under various discussions today. On the bidding, we understand now it's going to pick up, and even when we had the conference in Chennai, it was told that now they want to actually move towards more and more of FDRE. But in our case, you know that even currently, 65% of our 6.2 gigawatts is the non-bidding route and 35% is bidding route. In fact, it's gone up the bidding route because of 836 megawatts what we received from Tata Power. I've been saying this earlier on record, and I would continue to reiterate that I don't think order book would be an issue for us for the next at least couple of years. I don't think that's an issue. So we will continue to add, and I'm making a statement based on the clear pipeline of discussions what we are having with various clients at this stage as we speak.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and a very strong set of numbers. The first question is in relation to the 40 gigawatt of LOAs, you know, which are likely to get cancelled for solar energy projects where PPAs were not signed. I mean, how does that impact the wind sector capacity addition? And are there any moving orders in your backlog?
First thing I want to say is that our 6.2 gigawatts of confirmed orders, what we have, closing orders, what we have, nothing from that 42 gigawatts the PPA we're talking about is there in the 6.2.
Sure.
So there's actually no impact in existing order book. Even in the current visible, what I mentioned, sometime back to Mohit, is even in that, we don't have any of this nature. But having said that, the what it says is not that cancelling 42 gigawatts of PPA. The decision was to review that 42 gigawatts, go back to various stakeholders, wherever they think it is not feasible, either we cancel them, not 42, whatever can be signed, or even it said that if the REIA is willing to sign the PPA without the back of this, please go ahead and do it. So therefore, I don't think entire 42 gigawatt would get this thing. In fact, today I saw the clarification coming from the ministry through PIB is that, you know, that is not the intention. You know, there is, I don't think it's going to get cancelled. First of all, no impact on us. And second thing is, in fact, it is mainly for a lot of solar, pure solar bids, where the DISCOMs are not willing to sign pure solar PPAs at this stage. Some substance is that I don't think it will have a serious impact on Suzlon. We also, as we speak, already there is about 11 gigawatts of bids under progress, in fact, today. Either bids submitted and the reverse auction not done, or the, you know, bids announced and the bids are to be submitted. So I think the adequate pipeline is what they would provide. It will be more of an RTC. And we will continue to be out of booking for us in that two-third of our segment, which is the C&A and public sector.
Sure. So the second question is that your competitors, in a couple of them are launching a 5 megawatt variant. One is launching a 4 megawatt variant for onshore. So what is the pipeline on how Suzlon is going to graduate from 3.x and over what time frame?
Yeah. First of all, that today our 3.15 megawatt is a very successful product what we have. We have already supplied about 2.3 gigawatts, and then more than 5 gigawatts of in the current order book is 3.15. In fact, 90% of our current order book is 3.15. And there is a significant interest in 3.15 because people look at cost per kilowatt hour than what is the capacity of the model. Having said that, our next set of models would keep coming regularly, and you will start seeing us announcing the next models shortly. And we would be there at that level. I don't want to mention the timeline, but the progress is on the way. Some models are under prototype, and some are under currently under the procurement stage. We will not, in my view, that we will not see that as an issue for us to face the competition. I'm not trying to dodge the question here. But I don't see that as a major issue. We're pretty confident that when the 3.15 interest exhausts, much before that, we will have our next turbine, higher model turbine.
Sure. Just one last question. On the previous conference call, you had mentioned that by the end of the fiscal, you'll try to get your Eden export contract. Is there any traction in that direction? Thank you.
So I mentioned that next year is what we would get. The early next year is what we'll get the order, and then supplies would start in FY28. We still stand by that. Right now, the various markets are studying now, and the teams have been hired. We would move in that direction, in line with what we give the guidance.
Next fiscal. Okay, FY27.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Mahesh Patil from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congrats on the great set of results. So my first question is on the pipeline. So what is the near-term pipeline that we foresee? And if you can also bifurcate it in PSU, non-PSU segments. Thank you.
No, the current capacity, current order book, what we have 6.2, as I said sometime back, the 65% is, in fact, if you want further breakup, 61% is C&I, 14% is PSU, and about 35% is bidding at this stage. What is now, for us, what is more important now moving ahead is more than which segment is contributing or C&I continues to contribute. We are working consciously towards moving to the EPC, increasing the share of EPC contracts. I think that's our concentration now. The current 2080 is what we have. 20 is EPC, 80 is non-EPC. Our target is to move to 50-50 by FY28. That is where we are working significantly on the developing the new site, which is what I mentioned in my opening comment. We've been talking earlier, so we gave some details this time. As we speak today, we have identified sites for about 23 gigawatts, which have a significant wind potential within our turbines. And out of this 23 gigawatts, for about 7.5 gigawatts, we started the land acquisition where we have not signed the EPC contract. Nothing to do with the existing 6.2. And in fact, in this 7.5 gigawatts, we already acquired the land footprint along with the pathways for about 1150 megawatts. Some of these things, we signed the land contracts, not the EPC contracts. Some of them we are going ahead on our own with the seed capital. So I think that is what is going to be our significant concentration going to be. One is to bring back the EPC. What it does is that it gives us the competitive advantage because nobody else offers the EPC with the land. And second is that it gives us the control on execution, will improve our execution COD capacity. Third is that it will also allow us to pull the turbines in the manufacturing, so therefore more and more turbines can be supplied. I think that's going to be our future strategy while we continue to concentrate on the C&I market. I think the much more significant is that the mix of EPC and non-EPC.
Thank you, sir. And my second question is on the O&M segment. So if you look at the EBIT for this quarter compared to Q2 FY25, it's lower, 1.5 versus 2 billion. So could you help us understand why the dip in the margin here in O&M segment?
You're talking about O&M margin?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see, there is, on the contribution margin level, there is no difference between last year to this year. On the, you're talking about the EBITDA margin, where it is in one-off sort of an impact for this quarter. But if you look at it even on first half of this year, we're still at 37%. Our guidance still demands that, you know, we will be anywhere between this and 40%. This is one-off being conservative this quarter or some cost we provided for. Otherwise, there is no red flag in terms of margin guidance in OMS.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Satpal Singh Kanuja from Ishan Ventures. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Am I audible?
Yeah, you are. Please go ahead.
Okay. Sir, thank you for the opportunity. A lot of my questions have already been answered by you in the other questions which have been asked by other participants. I just need to ask one small thing. Can you give us a timeline when make for the lack of a name, if I call it the wind farms, When can we see the first windmill getting installed in our own wind farm? The land development business that we are getting into.
No, that even today we are doing it. All the EPC contracts, this 20% of EPC contract, what we are doing today is our own wind farms. It's like we acquire the land and provide doing these projects.
Okay.
I said in the previous question is that we want to significantly increase that to 50% share. And that is where we said that we identified about 23 gigawatts equivalent of sites in different states. And about 7.5 gigawatts, we already started the land acquisition. And 1150 megawatts, we have acquired the land as well. So therefore, these are all converted into EPC contracts moving forward. And in fact, you will start seeing us announcing more and more EPC contracts starting from maybe the quarter four of this year.
Wow, that is great news, sir. We have mentioned in many places that our our installed capacity is at about 4.5 gigawatts, and we have in past stated that you are targeting a 90% achievement of that capacity. Now, to attain 4 gigawatts of, say, deliveries a year, what is the kind of order book number that we need to attain?
Even today, we have the order book to that extent.
We have a delivery time of, say, 18 to 24 months. So, ideally, to do, say, 4 gigawatts a year, the order book number should reach somewhere around 8 to 10 gigawatts.
Not necessarily. I think as long as you have 1.5 times of your manufacturing capacity, so you'll be able to reach that. But I think the issue is not that. It is not the order book, which is actually restricting the how much capacity we are manufacturing. The issue is that how much the projects are able to offtake the turbines. As we've been talking earlier, even today we are in the push mode from the manufacturing, which means we want to push the turbines to the projects. We want to move that to pull mode, because people put pressure on us for turbines. We want more turbines. That stage is not yet come. One of the reasons why, again, linked to that EPC is also is that, you know, that would enable us to have a control on more supplies to happen. Because project execution happens faster, more turbines can be supplied. The manufacturing capacity is not an issue. I think in the country, the capacity addition keeps going up. So obviously, that 4 gigawatts can be reached at some point of time. We do expect that the capacity addition in the country is going to go up, because if you see that in H1, we doubled compared to the last year. From somewhere around 1476 megawatts, I think we reached 3086 megawatts in the first half of this year. And we are pretty confident that we reached 6 gigawatts. And then, in fact, we revised our estimate for FY27, earlier we were talking about 7 gigawatts, now we are saying that definitely we will hit 8 gigawatts in FY27 and then can reach about 9.5 gigawatts in FY28. That's our current estimate based on what we are working on with our own EPC sites and what the market is talking about.
Thank you, sir. Sir, we did 1550 megawatts of delivery last year. We are expecting a 60% increase, so that should reach to somewhere around 2,500 megawatts this year. Now, first half, we have already done 1,000 megawatts, 1 gigawatt. And we have in past been doing, say, first half, if we do 30%, we do 60-70% in the second half. Can I expect a better than 2,500 megawatt performance this year?
No, see, your expectations obviously can't stop. You have a right to expect.
our guidance
would remind that, you know, we said that 60% and we reaffirm that, you know, 60% growth in our parameters would remain.
Just sign my luck, sir. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Karthik Sharma from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. This is Shweta Jain here. First of all, congratulations on a very good set of numbers. My question is with respect to, you know, the overall sector that we're looking at, phenomenal growth in terms of the order book. But when you look at more of hybrid projects and FDRE projects coming into the picture, particularly hybrid, how do we see BESS as a competitor? Particularly when, I mean, there is a line in the investor presentation that says with wind integration, two charging cycles of BESS can be achieved to further optimize the landed LCOEs. Could you a bit explain on this, please, as well?
Yeah. Aseta, there are number of experts on the call today who have different opinions about solar plus BESS versus this. And I know that there is so much talk about solar plus BESS is enough, you don't need wind. But we have been saying, and we continue to say, that it is not one versus the other. If we need to achieve the lowest cost of energy, which is mandatory for us, and then we also need to achieve a capacity addition in a manner that we meet the load profile of the country, then only you can replace the fossil fuel. For that, what is required is FDRE. We have done our own analysis, very detailed analysis. If you want to create a project of, let's say, 300 megawatts, where you need 80% of PLF on a year, with minimum 75% on every month basis and 90% availability in the peak period. If you do that, if you do the BESS and the solar only, which is what many people are talking, the tariff is expected to be somewhere around 6.5. Okay, and the same thing if you do solar plus wind plus BESS, which is what is the required one, the tariff falls to somewhere around 4.7, 4.65. Okay. So therefore, on the cost of energy basis, you can never ever have a lower tariff with solar plus BESS meeting the round-the-clock power. This is just a myth. With all my experience, I can say that this is being spoken by the people who do not understand the sector. You will never hear this from utility players, whether it is like people like Tata Power or Torrent Power or NTPC, anyone. It is from different people. Otherwise, there's no way we can achieve our target with solar plus BESS. It has to be all three. Clearly, that is the only way we will actually get the lowest tariff.
And this, can we, you know, fast forward to over the next 5 years also, assuming the costs go down for all the three verticals, this equation will still remain true?
See, Sweta, first of all, let's talk about battery. Okay? Today, the single source. Can we afford to have a supply concentration of a single country which can dictate what will happen in our country?
Correct.
That's a major, major concern. Okay, fine.
Correct.
And the price of batteries is not in our hands. Okay? Even recently, we just withdrew some of the benefits what it is and the cost is going up, both for solar as well as BESS. So therefore, as a country, we can't afford to have that. And like we've done in the solar, we will continue to do on the batteries, ultimately move towards the domestic. Okay? So therefore, what would happen to the cost is that the moment we reach that economy of size, the cost would keep coming down. So definitely, cost would come down for all three. Even today, that's in the last quarter with the GST change from the 12% to 5%. Obviously, even the wind itself is now impacted about 15 to 17% on the tariff. So tariffs would keep coming down. But I don't think it's a good idea for the country to have a concentration on this. And more importantly, the country which has the most capacity of battery has announced that in the next 5 years, that is 2026 to 2030, they will add 120 gigawatts of wind every single year. And the last 5 years, they were adding their target was 50 gigawatts per year. They revised their target to 120 gigawatts per year, a country which has the maximum capacity of BESS. So therefore, there people understand that, you know, you can never do with solar plus battery. Okay? So this is a completely a myth that solar plus BESS alone can meet our demand. It can never meet.
Got it. Very good perspective, sir. Thank you on that. Coming to the company financials, sir, on SC Forge particularly, can you break the first half growth into how much was driven by Suzlon and the others? Like, can you break that number up? And also the levers for margin expansions. We've seen a very good margin expansion from the first half of last year.
Yeah, let me pull out that number right now. I don't have it readily, but I think
it's slide 25 on the presentation.
How much is it? Suzlon is growing by double. No, share in the correct 53%. Yeah. So it is now almost like a 50-50 between the Suzlon and the non-Suzlon as we speak now.
We expect that this would come down. It will become like one third and two third between Suzlon and non-Suzlon. Suzlon will be one third and two third will be Suzlon in FY27. That's our expectation. While Suzlon numbers are growing and the Suzlon offtake from the SC4s will increase, but their offtake or their supplies to the non-Suzlon customers will significantly increase because they are now also getting into the non-wind and first of all, the exports are increasing. In the wind sector itself, and the second thing is they're getting into non-wind sector, plus the forging unit is coming up with different products. So that's why while the numbers of SC4s today don't move the needle so much for Suzlon as a whole, but if you look at their growth story itself, so that is a great story, is that in spite of the fact that our forging unit was almost shut for 2 months in this quarter because of the restriction in a particular skill component, which is not quite clear now, instead of the fact that, you know, our numbers from H1 to H1 show it, both in EBITDA as well as revenue, significantly gone up. Okay? And that trend is what is encouraging to us, and that will continue. And then I think guidance-wise, one-third, two-third is what Suzlon and non-Suzlon is what we can say for FY27 onwards.
Got it. And sir, on margins, like we've seen a sharp jump from 8.6 to 19.5% here.
Yeah. This is mainly the various initiatives what they've taken in terms of cost control and then, you know, increasing the earlier we were depending upon outsourcing of the machining. Then now we have installed our own machines of machining. Machining is completely being done internally. So recycling of scrap has increased. The procurement costs have come down. The number of the cost out initiatives what they've taken is what is helping us to increase our margins.
So these margins would be sustainable in the future? That's
sure.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. That's it from my side for now.
Thank you. Next question is from Shiva from Purnatra Investment Advisors. Please go ahead. Shiva, you may go ahead with the question.
Audible?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you are. Please go ahead.
First of all, congratulations for a great set of numbers. My question is first is with respect to you saying that in 2-3 years, EPC will move to 50-50. So wanted to understand how will the contribution margin of WTG play out in the next 2-3 years? Because it is at a very high stage, I mean, it is at 26%. So how will that move going ahead? And what will be the capital, initial capital required to get this land? What will be our capital requirement for this?
No, let me answer your second point first. We provided a seed capital of about 150 crores that will keep getting recycled. What happens is by the time we acquire, let's say that a 300 megawatt wind farm is what in some place we started acquisition of the land. By the time we reach 25% of the land acquired, so we would normally try to find a partner, the co-developer, where EPC is not signed, but the land contract is signed with the condition that the EPC would be with us. And then they will reimburse for the entire 25% what we acquired, and then future, the balance 100%, they'll compensate. So this is how this recycling happens. So therefore, 150 to 160 crores is what the seed capital requires. Even today, that I said some time back, we already acquired about 1150 megawatts of land. So that is what is the range in which, and then we also started now, you know, getting the money back from through the land contract. On the margins, FY28 is a bit far away when we reach this 50-50, and a lot of things will happen in could be on the positive side on the margins. So the let's wait for that. The obviously that the world record, if you see, whenever we did EPC, we used to do about almost 80-85% EPC in about FY17 or FY18, and that point of time, margins on EPC were much higher than the equipment supply. So that is
really
that our margin is better in
ETC
than in equipment supply.
Okay, understood. Helpful. And the second is with respect to cash flow from operations, if you could just help me understand what will be the payment schedule for a 100 megawatt if it is a 600 odd crore. At what stages do we get the payments? I understand the revenue accruing, but when do we get the final payments at different stages?
Yeah. And let me address this, and also I know that why you're asking this question, so therefore I'll address that concern as well, because of the receivables going up. And normally for
most of our contracts, we get 5 to 10% advance. Then the 40 to 45% is what we get on dispatch. And another 40 to 45% is what we get on receipt. And 5% on commissioning. This is our standard payment terms given to take here and there some variations. But then on the public sector projects, and which is what we've done significant supply in the last few quarters. In fact, in the Q1 and Q2, our supplies to the specific public sector contract have been more than 50%. Even in this 565 megawatts, what we supplied in quarter two, close to 300 megawatt has gone to the single PSU. There, it's a bid terms, and we know that what are the payment terms in advance. There, in addition to giving 10% on advance, the first payment comes only after the materials are received at site. Then that also is only 70%. In other contracts, we receive like almost like 90-95% on the time of materials received at site. Here you get 70%. And then the balance 20% gets spread till commissioning and testing and various things. We take that in, plus also in the public sector, the time taken from the time it becomes, material reaches to their whole process of completing and taking it. If normally other contracts, it takes, let's say about 20-25 days, 3 weeks time we get our payment, once it is due. But here it can take even up to 45 days. So, but then we knew these things, that's how we had a perfect line of credit for this project. And significant supplies having been made to particular PSU contract, you are seeing a surge in the receivables, but that is not a red flag in my opinion. That tapers down, we'll get back into the control. We know that why it happened, and we know the reason, and we also know it will get controlled. So it's purely because of that payment terms. And that we knew in advance. And then we have adequately loaded the working capital interest in our bits and everything. And everything is covered in our pricing.
Understood. So third is with respect to booking. The finance cost was directed that the net finance cost would be in the range of 200 odd crores. So is that, because it has hit 150 odd crores, so what will be the net finance cost for this year? And the second part is the DTA, you've added 700 odd crores. What is the entire potential and or how much have we used as of now till now, or what can is left over? That's the second part.
The way, obviously you all know I'm not a CFO, but the way I understood the DTA, I will explain to you, and if I make some mistake, my colleague is here will cover it. As long as you have a carry forward losses, which are known to us, you filed in your income tax returns, and the moment there is a certainty towards the profits going to happen, and then, you become mandatory under the accounting standards to provide the DTA. Here, the auditors took a conservative view of looking at the profitability of the company over the next 3 year period, and then we have a much more carry forward losses to the extent of about 11,000 crores. But because they've only taken for the next forward 3 years, they are now converted to that. First of all, we done in the quarter four of last year. In the 6 months, obviously, additional 6 months extension happens. They covered for the balance portion. So now, as we speak, on 1st of October, we have about 1229 crores of the tax credit, tax asset, you call it, so deferred tax asset, which means that up to, even if we don't add any further DTA, but we expect that to get added further as the time proceeds, they will see more and more visibility of profits with the even current 12-20 crores means effectively for the next 5,000 crores of profit as and when we reach. Till that time, we have a tax rate. So we will not, there is no tax outgoing in terms of the cash. But then we expect that as the time passes, then some more DTA would get added. Anand, you want to add anything? What? My colleague Anand will also further add.
To answer your question specifically, carry forward losses as per annual report of FY25 were about 14,000 crores, and DTA recognized so far is on about 6,000 crores. So there is sizable balance left on which potentially going forward, based upon DTA recognition condition getting met, there is a potential
for additional DTA.
So just to understand, the max potentially is 8,000 crores, 25%. That would be 2,000 more addition, the max that we can add. The leftover 8,000 crores.
No, Shiva. So,
Further, the max potential. Although what can be planned out is different, but the max, the potential.
But today we that is in addition to the 5,000 crores profit shield, tax shield we have for the 5,000 crores of profit today, it will be additional.
Understood. And with respect to the net finance cost, how do you, what was
I think we, our guidance has been that we will have about 70 crores per quarter as a net financial cost. So the maybe we will touch about 250 crores. This quarter we saw slightly higher because we had we also started issuing surety bonds. And for some time, we had a parallel of surety bonds as well as letter of comfort from REC. So that's why we had some additional costs and it has gone to 80. So I think our otherwise guidance would be, we would be around 250 crores of net financing cost in the year. And also let's understand that the volumes are increasing. When the volumes increase,
working capital.
And then you're also seeing that, you know, the which supply, which contract you're supplying, so if the contract has extended, if you do it to PSU, that's something that increases, so cost would keep changing from quarter to quarter. But these are all known, you know, they are not unknown things which are coming up as, you know, as a surprise to us.
Okay, thank you. If I may squeeze in one last question, you've directed that the margins for OMS divisions have come down, it is a one-off thing, but if you could just give a direction, is the revenue per megawatt for the new S114 similar to the older ones?
No.
OMS?
OMS. The previous question was specific to OMS. I didn't talk about all business divisions. In fact, all business divisions, there is no reduction. If you look at our WTG division, we still have a 26.9% contribution margin. And even EBITDA margin is good. And even in the OMS, our contribution margin still remains at 66%. There is no reduction. In fact, wherever there is possible, there is only improvement. Our margins will only change based on the revenue share between the WTG versus OMS versus others. In fact, quarter one to quarter two, we moved. Our WTG revenue share has gone up from 82% to 84%. When the WTG increases, that margin being at lower than the OMS margin, this margin will change. While the individual business margins will increase, continue to increase, that's what happened even this year, this quarter for WTG. But because the mix of revenue changes, at the group level, the margins can change. But
OMS division margins are slightly lower, right? EBITDA margins is 34.5 for India OMS.
That is what I explained to you last time, or the previous question, that this is sort of a one-off. If you look at H1, we are still at 37%. Okay. Quarter is 35%, but H1 is still 37. So therefore, our guidance continues that we would be between, you know, hovering around 39% to 40% of the range. This is a one-off for this quarter alone. So that's why I said there are no red flags there, and it will be normal moving ahead.
So the revenue per megawatt for OMS is in the same range for S114 compared to S114 to the earlier models?
No, it means like per turbine different, per megawatt it will be different. Because you're maintaining a turbine, so therefore if it is an 100 megawatt wind farm, there you're maintaining 50 turbines and here you'll be maintaining 30 turbines.
Yeah.
So therefore the turbine cost, per turbine the OMS price could be higher, but per megawatt cost will be low, but also your cost per megawatt price will be low, but your cost also is low. Your number of turbines you're maintaining are low. Instead of maintaining 50 turbines, you'll only maintain 33 turbines in a 100 megawatt form. So all your costs, your space cost, your manpower cost, everything will be low. So therefore, it won't impact the margins that way.
The growth will be slightly lower compared to the older.
No, growth also will not be lower. Growth, everything will remain the same. So you need to look at the price per turbine rather than the price per megawatt. in OMS, because your maintenance cost comes per turbine, but your maintenance cost doesn't come per megawatt. Okay. So therefore, as long as you're maintaining your price levels, cost levels for the turbine, your margins won't come down. So therefore, let's not get confused with 3 megawatt turbine. Tomorrow, if you go to 5 megawatt turbine, obviously price per megawatt will come down, but then you're maintaining only 20 turbines for 100 megawatt pump. Your cost also will be low. So therefore, in OMS, you should look at cost per turbine, price per turbine. And from that angle, the higher the capacity, it's not going to have any impact on your margins.
Understood. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. Next question is from Abhishek Nigam from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. So MNRE recently came out with a detailed, SOP for local manufacturing of wind turbines. I think where they basically give details regarding what qualifies, what is not qualified. And I just wanted to know, after that, is there a little more clarity on, is it in terms of localization, is it more easy now, easy, tough? How are the, competitors responding? Any clarity you can give on that?
Yeah. Clarity was there right from the beginning. So SOP it defines that clarity in a proper way, that how do you actually put it, what happens, step one, step two. They are absolutely clear that the companies have to get listed there, and before getting listed, there will be inspection, physical inspection, and you got to meet that inspection requirements. You need to meet the ISO requirements. There is a process by which you can list the company. Only you can buy from that. Not only SOP, they have now also come up with what is called the REEMS, that is the Renewable Energy Equipment Import Monitoring System. Okay. They're even going to the extent of if you want to import any component, you got to get registered there. Then only you'll be allowed to import, otherwise you'll not be allowed to import. That has become effective from 1st of November. And they're also moving further of the next portal. What they're developing is that not just the import, they want to monitor till which turbine, which project it got, that particular component got consumed, okay, where it is being used. So therefore, there's going to be a complete control on where from you're buying and which project you're buying and what are you doing it. And in fact, they're also saying that, they also said in the SOP that you can have, even if you come with a new model, we will not, the new model is in the same platform, unless the power, incremental power is more than 10%, we don't recognize as a new model. Because some people can try slightly saying the new model so that they get that advantage of up to 800 megawatt you can import, okay, any new model. So they even clarified that we will not allow even that, unless the rotor diameter goes up by 2% and the power goes up by more than 10%, it won't be considered as a new model. So it will consider as an old model only, and you don't get the benefit of 800 megawatts or whatever it is can be imported. So I think this only shows that they are very, very extremely keen that the domestic manufacturing has to increase, and which we said earlier, and we meet that requirement fully, and we encourage that, and this provides level playing field. Now the cost advantage what people had on cheaper imports would go away.
Okay, and is there also, subsequent steps which are expecting? Like if I see on the solar side, we are seeing, it started with ALMM, then ALCM. Now they've already announced ALWM. People expect ALBM, which is on the battery side. So, subsequent to this, do you see, more announcements in the coming years?
Hey, the wind, because we know about wind, we're done right in the beginning, because we have the manufacturing capacity for all the components. In solar, we didn't have it, so they're going step by step. What probably we can expect is now their next step is they will go sub-component level. So if you're talking about a gearbox, they're going to look at it as, are you assembling a gearbox here? Then saying it's domestically manufactured, what restrictions should be put on sub-component level? Because the castings are available in India, then they might say that you need to buy only from India. So the step two is what they will do is the component level, sub-component level restrictions. Otherwise, all components are manufactured in India. So therefore, at one stroke, they have gone, unlike in solar. Solar initially they started the modules, then they went into the cell, and now they're getting into different things. But here, only next step will be sub-component level.
Fair enough. And so just last question. So, what I'm seeing on the solar side is that, you know, companies are now sort of going into these adjacencies. So companies are looking to, you know, get into transformer manufacturing, inverters, batteries. I know this question is probably a little too early, but if that subcomponent level manufacturing comes in wind, I mean, would you be willing to explore that?
Why not?
Or is it too early?
Oh, no, we already see. At one point of time, even today, we manufacture our turbines. We make our panels. At one point of time, we're making even generators. So therefore, we already did that. Even today, we do our own transformers, we do our own panels. So therefore, with increase in volumes, we do have that experience, we do have that the capability. So therefore, why not get into that? If somebody can do it, someone who is the easiest for anybody, it is for us. Because we do have that experience, we do have those the facilities available already for the purpose of manufacturing this thing. Definitely we'll look at that.
Okay. Perfect, sir. Thank you so much. That really helps.
Thank you. Next question is from Amit Mahawar from UBS. Please go ahead.
So, hi. Congrats on great operational performance. Sir, you explained on the EPC rationale in detail about those 2-3 points why Suzlon is looking at. Now, we're also expanding capacity. Eventually, we will target export market. Do you think on the risk profile side, the risk will need to be significantly looked at? Because I agree industry is growing very well. This year is going to be, you know, good, and our share is ramping up. All the policies are very, very favorable. But as we move the EPC route, you know, and I understand integrated renewable power is in your mind when you think about EPC. You know, if you can throw some light on potential risks that we'll have to keep in mind, because, or rather, why not think about only the, you know, WTG model that we anyways have, forgings, O&M, a very diversified business model. You know, why go the EPC route considering the potential risks? I just wanted to, you know, get some handle on, you know, potentially what can go wrong if we go the EPC route. That's it. Thank you.
If I understand you right, there could be some confusion in the definition of EPC. EPC, even today we do. Okay. 20% is EPC. When we talk about EPC, that is where we acquire the land and we do the complete BOP and supply the turbines and commission them and basically do the OMS. Our second alternative is that land doesn't belong to us, and even we may not. Other extreme is that, you know, nothing belongs to us. We just supply the turbines and supervise the entire work. That's called the equipment supply.
Okay. Yeah.
The risk on EPC is much less and much higher control. In fact, the EPC is a risk mitigation model because we are just supplying the equipment there. Our equipment supply would completely depend upon its readiness. Whether his project is ready to take the turbines or not, if the turbines are on the ground for 2 years, 3 years, what happens to the turbines, warranties. It's a huge risk. Plus, we also can't even predict how much quantity of turbines we can supply. Because we can't really know when the project is going to happen. That is what is the concern today for us. What we have today problem is that. Okay.
Right.
Most of the places where we supply the turbines, we are not able to commission them, or in the non-EPC project. Very less in the EPC project. So when we move to the EPC, we are mitigating that risk. Anyway, there is no additional risk we are taking it. We acquire the land. And in fact, we are mitigating the risk of land and ROW, which is a major risk where we are not doing the EPC. That risk is we are mitigating here by taking the land and ROW issue out of it, because they're acquiring the land along with the pathways much in advance. So EPC route is actually a risk mitigation, not the risk creation. That would significantly increase our capacity addition speed at which we can add each year, and it would improve our turbine supplies, and it would improve our margins. Most importantly, that is a significant competitive advantage what we have. Because we are the only player who can actually provide an EPC service along with the land. There is no one else who can actually provide significant. When it comes to the export, there we would take the risk of only supply. There, because that's a new geography, we don't understand that, we really don't get into EPC there. We will not take the risk of EPC when we go out of the country.
Sure, definitely. No, that's very helpful, sir. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you. Next question is from Gauri Shankar Dalal from Cresta Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. So I have a couple of queries. So first of all, like we have a cash balance of around 1800 crores in the balance sheet. So how are we planning to use it and put to use and create value for the shareholders?
See, first of all, right now, today, this is a very small cash what is available. So, therefore, we're expanding the business. Let's keep that as a reserve money, whatever is required for in between for various purposes. And then also we need our CapEx. If we're spending money on the CapEx, we're spending, as I said, that we provided 150 crores of seed money for our development. So, as we further we go ahead and more we generate the cash, then that's a good problem to have it. What do we do with the cash? Okay, whether we wanted to do dividends, what it is. But let's reach that stage of having a good problem on hand. But right today, I think it is purely used for our CapEx and various other purposes.
Okay. And so my next question is with regard to the revenues and all. So like your revenue year on year has increased by around 84%. So it is majorly led by the volumes. Can we assume there is some moderation with regard to the prices also year on year?
No, I think our average realization per megawatt remains more or less the same in 9 months of the guidance what we give. There is no change in the revenue per megawatt.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a request to participants to please limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from Smith Kala from RSPN Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Congratulations for the good set of numbers. I just wanted to understand about how is the company looking at for FY27 given a great 26 is going on.
Let's concentrate on Q3 of this year. And then we will look at the FY27. Obviously, there will be growth. I don't want to put a number to that.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question is from Kumar Divyanshu, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. My sound is audible.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah, okay, thank you for giving the opportunity. Basically, I have one key question. Like, the first question is regarding the promoter holding. As far as I can see, that promoter holding is very much low, like it is 11%. So, it is there for the management planning or it is there for the company planning to increase the promoter holding?
I'm not the right person to comment on that because I'm a professional CEO. This is a question we got just to the promoters. But to the extent I know that they have no intention of reducing further and their commitment is fully clear for the company moving forward. And whether they will increase or not increase, I think that I would be the wrong person to answer that question. I think as and when you have an opportunity to meet up with the Santis, I think that's the question you should address it to them.
Good news, sir. And the second question is regarding that what is the like maximum time duration for the execution of an order? How much period could you comment on that?
No, I think the whatever order book we have is that this is to be executed in the next 18 to 24 months.
Okay,
current order.
Okay, and what about the order inflows for the upcoming quarter?
No, every project when they're giving us order, they and we together decide what is the execution timeline. Depending upon that, if it is a bid project, what is the PPA timeline and when is that evacuation facility is coming in. So it can be as less as 18 months. In some cases, it can go up to even 26, 27 months. It varies from contract to contract.
I think this point I have understood. Just from asking that, is there any upcoming order inflow for the upcoming quarters? Like orders in pipeline or not?
Yeah, I explained that order pipeline. I said that there is significant order pipeline and we will continue to announce the new orders and hopefully we will continue to maintain the trend of closing order book higher than the opening order book in spite of the fact that our supplies during the quarter would keep increasing.
Okay, sir. And like debtor days and days payable is quite high, as far as you can see. So, is
there not clear? You're not clear. Can you speak a bit louder?
I'm asking that debtor days and days payable is quite high in the ratio, as far as I can see. So, is there any please comment on that? Is there any planning that how will decrease that particular number?
Yeah, we explained sometime back, it's basically happening because of a public sector contract, and that proportion being higher. I think we went through this question in detail in the previous question. Answer to that.
Thank you. We'll be able to take one last question. We take the last question from Hardik Sharda from Mavera Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my question. I just want to know, understand what is the situation around rare earth metals and how does it affect Suzlon given the geopolitical situation. Thank you. That will be my question.
No, I see, as far as the steel is concerned, generally we get protected in the contract. Steel price up and down, except for the cement plant. And the rest of the metals, we keep watching, and then somewhere we need to procure. Rare earth we don't use much, so therefore I don't think we have any impact of rare earth on our turbine. So therefore we are completely insulated from the so-called geopolitical issues of rare earth to be supplied or not supplied. It will not impact us.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management team for any closing comments.
Thank you very much for joining and making it very interactive. And any further details we need, my colleagues and IR team are available for you to provide. And please reach out to them. Any amount of details you need to satisfy yourself, we will provide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Suzlon Energy Limited, that concludes the conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.